In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's get back into the Texans here. Practice today, 11:30 practice today. So they'll be practicing while In the Loop is on. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610, the Odyssey app, all of our social media. We'll keep you up to speed on everything going on out of Texans practice. So Dan Orlovsky did a ranking of all the quarterbacks in the NFL based on 7 different categories. This feels like it's right up Dan Orlovsky's alley here with all the different aspects of physical aspects and some mental of playing quarterback. He rated them all, Seth, based on arm strength, ball placement, mechanics, decision-making, pocket presence, rushing ability, and what he calls second reaction. The ability to make plays off script, basically, is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Calls it second reaction. I will say this, these articles are much more fun to read now that the Texans have a quarterback that has a chance of showing up in the top 10 of various categories like this. And CJ Stroud showed up nicely in here. Did not show up in the top 10 for arm strength,
yeah,
rushing ability,
yeah,
or second reaction. Of those three, which are you most surprised he didn't at least sniff the top 10 in?
I'd say second reaction.
Yeah, me too.
And I wonder exactly how much of that was more. Is he saying second reaction? I don't think he means second read. I think he means more perhaps when the play breaks down.
Exactly.
Or improvising, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the part where that it's almost athleticism is baked into that. The guys that can scramble around more and do a lot more of that, which we know CJ can do a good job with that. It's just, it's not his calling card.
No.
He's not as physically gifted as an athlete as some of the other guys are there. So that's the only one I would really wonder about, but that might be based more on criteria than anything else.
Yeah, what I think is interesting is that one of the guys who shows up in the top 10, and this actually does give you a flavor for just how much like this is the improv part of the game. Gardner, yeah, Minshew is 9th on the list for,
yeah,
second reaction ability, you know?
So. Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, Gardner Minshew does a good job of,
right,
kind of making something from now. We saw that, I mean, when he was a rookie and the Texans faced him, that was how he burned the Texans a few times, was with some of the improvisational ability.
Yeah. Now, here's where CJ did show up, and he showed up in the top 5 in all of these. Ball placement, 5th. Mechanics, 4th. Decision-making, 4th. His best ranking was in pocket presence, which is 3rd. But those are all things that align with what we saw in his rookie year, I think.
My knee jerk Homer reaction was, what? How is he not top 3 in any of these? And then, yeah, you realize, oh, there's guys like Matt Stafford and Joe Burrow and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
The decision making with the football is the one where if I were to get hyper defensive about this, I honestly think that he should be above Joe Burrow. So with the decision making with the football, he had Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, Joe Burrow, and then CJ Stroud. Because I would include in that taking sacks.
Yes.
I think that Joe Burrow, sometimes the decision he makes with the football is to not get rid of the football. And that's something that Joe Burrow's gotten better at, but I don't think it's as advanced as a lot of other quarterbacks. I think Joe Burrow still takes too many risks. He's had double-digit interceptions in his second and third season. He was on pace for double-digit interceptions last year before he got injured. Having 11 or 12 interceptions isn't the worst thing in the world, but I don't think it's an exemplary display of football decision-making. So that's the one part where I feel like CJ should be flipped with Joe Burrow in that ranking.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed that the ball placement specialist, the BPS, only finished fifth in ball placement on here, honestly.
You know what? I'll go with this, too. And Orlovsky loves C.J. Stroud, so it's not like I'm going to roast him for this. But I do think that he hasn't watched C.J. Stroud as much as we have. But I think that some of that is that, man, when you look at his completion percentage and everything else like that, it doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah.
It's CJ's very good for a young quarterback, especially at either throwing the ball away or taking what could be a really risky throw and choosing to either make it a ball that's going to be either an incompletion or a reception, but definitely not an interception. He'll place it in a tough place to make a catch, but it's a safe throw. So I think sometimes he gets dinged a little too much with those types of things in the conventional stats, but whatever.
There were a couple interesting things about this. I kind of nerded out on this yesterday. As you know, Seth, I'm a power rankings junkie. It can be anything, and I love to read this stuff.
I nerded out on Foley Fatakasi.
We've all got our vices, Sean.
We've all got our vices.
We all have our fetishes. Seth has a Foley Fatakasi fetish. I've got a power ranking.
I like
fetish.
The big guys.
Yeah.
I'm into the big guys.
The big fellas. I actually took these seven categories, these top tens. And I did the thing you do where you give 10 points to number one, 9 points to number two, 8 points to number three for all seven categories, mm-hmm. and then added all the points up and everything to come up with a immersive, inclusive, you know, kind of cumulative ranking of all the quarterbacks. And C.J. Stroud finished fifth in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. When you add up all seven of these things, and they're all weighted equally, obviously, the way I'm doing this, just because it's easier to do it that way, Mahomes is a runaway number one with 47 points. Joe Burrow is second with 40. Matt Stafford is third with 39 points. Man, Dan Orlovsky loves him some. Now, keep in mind, former teammate of Dan Orlovsky in Detroit. They drafted Matthew Stafford because Dan Orlovsky went 0-16 the year before in Detroit in 2008. So he loves Matt Stafford. He's got him third. Josh Allen fourth. C.J. Stroud is fifth on this list. If you add up all the, you know, the points, air quotes, yeah, of this stuff.
I think that's, you know, if C.J. Stroud continues to develop on the track that he's on, he still has to prove some things, you know, and just in terms of doing it for the duration and doing it this year and, you know, with everybody having watched his film, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, when you think about most great quarterbacks, it's very few of them are the guys that had the most magnificent arm talent. It's so much about... It's a decathlon more than the 100-meter sprint. Mm-hmm. It's an accumulation of skill sets that all create the finished product. And that's where I think you can get excited about C.J. Stroud. And really, the manner in which C.J. Stroud played last year, it was much different than the typical standout rookie of the year type quarterback performance, because it had nothing to do with his legs, or at least very little to do with his legs. He didn't have the benefit of a good rushing attack. He didn't have the benefit of a stellar defense on the other side of the ball. And he did it by executing the offense. And it was a decreasingly dumbed down offense as the year went by. With credit to Bobby Slowick, they added to it and added to it and added to it till by the end of the year, it was more like a veteran quarterback running that offense. So that's where so many people like Dan Orlovsky are so bullish on C.J. Stroud, because, yes, he had a promising rookie season, but he did it in a different manner than most rookies do when they come out of the gates really strong at quarterback.
There was one player. This was the other thing I thought was interesting after I went through the exercise of kind of going through all seven categories, what Orlovsky had in the top 10. Again, C.J. Stroud finished fifth if you do like a point system with it. I thought the other interesting thing was there was one quarterback that Orlovsky had in the top 10 in each of these categories, in all seven of them. There was only one quarterback that finished in the top 10 in all seven of the categories. And again, the categories are arm strength, ball placement, mechanics, decision making, pocket presence, rushing ability, and second reaction, or the ability to improv. The one quarterback that finished in the top 10, Dak Prescott, in every category. Now, some of them, he was ninth, you know, and so.
If you want to get super nerdy about this, argue about guys that should have been ninth or 10th or 11th or so, the Dak Prescott on the second reaction stuff, I kind of question that. I think, if anything, Dak Prescott is, that's not one of his strong suits.
He was seventh in the league.
Things break down, I thought last year one of the best things about Dak Prescott and why he was so effective was that they did a really good job of keeping him on time and in rhythm with the offense. But then, because of that, he had more of a plan for when he would run. So I guess that's probably part of it. Like, now it's, there was just a little too much of, like, in-the-moment decision-making with Kellen Moore. Mike McCarthy took it and said, this is the offense. You go through your first three reads. If there's nothing there, they either check down or run. And he did a good job of that. But ball placement. Orlovsky said that he had a hard time deciding between Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers for 10th place in ball placement.
Okay.
Which shocked me. I don't think Josh Allen has improved his ball placement and accuracy so much that he should be above Aaron Rodgers in that regard.
No. I'm surprised Josh Allen is even kind of hovering around the fringes of the top 10 in ball placement.
Yeah.
Given the number of picks he throws. Dak was interesting, man. He didn't finish in the top six in a single category, except for mechanics. He was fifth on the list in mechanics. But Dak Prescott, between 6 and 10 in almost everything, except for one thing, he was fifth. So just, which kind of matches Dak, right? Like, you watch him and you go, okay, I don't know that he's spectacular at anything, but he's super productive and he's very well-rounded.
You know, one thing that CJ hasn't necessarily gotten a lot of credit for outside of Houston, and I wonder how much people have really picked up on it, because they watched enough of him in college that maybe they, in their brain, their version of what C.J. Stroud throwing the ball looks like, it's already set in their brain. C.J. had good mechanics to begin with, but he actually really tightened them up and improved them over the course of last year.
Yep.
So he was fourth in mechanics.
Yeah.
So no insult whatsoever behind Joe Burrow, Matt Stafford, and Justin Herbert. Stafford's an interesting one, because I think Stafford's a guy that there's times where some of the brilliance that he displays is when he's doing stuff at odd arm angles and everything.
Yep.
But I think sometimes that does hurt him. So I wouldn't actually, like, having the ability to do all that fun stuff is really cool and good, but I actually think that his mechanics are almost to his detriment at times. He gets a little too wild and crazy with it.
I thought the same thing when he had, and Matthew Stafford finishes very high in five of these categories. I thought the same thing about that one, Seth. I'm like, man, Stafford feels like a guy, he may have good mechanics, but he's very undisciplined with them, you know?
If there's one thing, yeah, it's like a guy who's a really good shot, but he's a little bit crazy. He's a little bit of a gunslinger, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I feel like the one person that would argue me tooth and nail on this is C.J. Stroud, because he would look at it as shade and non-acknowledgement of Matt Stafford's greatness. We know from podcasting in the offseason that C.J. Stroud is just an absolute diehard fan of Matt Stafford. So he would probably get offended if I said his mechanics were as good as Matt Stafford's.
Caleb Williams is too. Caleb Williams did it. I think it's with Kay Adams he did the interview, because she went to Bears camp the day after she was at Texans camp. And I was like, man, these young bucks love them some Matthew Stafford, man.
He is kind of like Danielle Hunter. J.J. Watt pointed this out during the season last year, that he felt like Danielle Hunter, just by virtue of playing in Minnesota, really didn't get the credit he deserved. And Minnesota's had good teams, but it's when it comes to national media, it's a little bit of an afterthought at times. I think that Matt Stafford very much got that. He's always very much been in the conversation, but because he was tucked away in the wasteland of Detroit, it's hard to ignore how bad they've been. Matt Stafford's teams have been versus playoff caliber opponents and winning teams over the years. That it's hard to acknowledge it, I think. Whereas the guys that watch film a lot feel that same way about Matt Stafford that J.J. Watt felt about Danielle Hunter.
It's a good comparison. Speaking of the Cowboys and Dak Prescott, Jerry Jones, he's got an issue with his marquee receiver right now. CeeDee Lamb wants big-time money. The Cowboys have just been kind of twiddling their thumbs, really, with all their contract stuff. Dak Prescott CeeDee Lamb. I mean, Micah Parsons has fallen into an afterthought with all the CeeDee Lamb drama going on right now. Jerry Jones said earlier this week or over the weekend there was no urgency to sign CeeDee Lamb. That's a direct quote. CeeDee Lamb saw that quote, LOL'd it on Twitter. Jerry Jones did his best, I guess, to walk back or clarify what he meant by that. Let's grade him. How did he do in clarifying his no urgency to sign CeeDee Lamb stance?
I got in trouble a little the other day when I said, look, we're not urgent about CD. Well, no one appreciates CD being on the field any more than I do. But let me say this. He wouldn't be taking a snap out here today if he'd been here for a while. You've got to use your head when you expose key players. That gives the other younger players a chance to do it. We know exactly what CD can do, and he worked out with Dak. And so we wouldn't have him out here. It has really not anything to do with his contract. Dak won't be out here this afternoon. And so the bottom line is, what it is no, there's not that urgency. Now, I understand completely the angst that's happening when you're anxious about and someone says anything about whether you're missed or not. Well, CD, you're missed, okay? But you're not missed out here competing, and it doesn't put any pressure anyplace on us.
So the aggregators, I'm guessing, took that and put up the quote, you're not missed. Is that the they're going to try to poke and agitate CeeDee Lamb as much as possible?
Yeah, that's what you're going
to
pull.
To get a response, yeah.
That's what you're going to pull. I guess what Jerry is saying there is like, hey, man, there's really no need for us to get CeeDee a contract to get him back in here because he wouldn't be doing 90% of this stuff anyways.
We don't need him right this moment, and we trust that something will get done or what have you. This is hard because I think in a lot of ways he's playing it the way you should as a negotiator. You don't want to look desperate to get something done. The problem with Jerry Jones is he has a long-established track record of having his feet stuck in concrete when it comes to doing things proactively, and now he's stuck in this mind screw where they're not getting deals done with Dak Prescott or CeeDee Lamb, but he's citing how hard it is to operate when you have to pay all these guys all this money. But one of the reasons it's even harder to operate is because they've dragged their feet in paying guys like Dak Prescott previously, so that you end up paying. If they don't pay Dak Prescott right now, they're going to end up paying $5, $10 million more per year next year, or they're going to be stuck in some kind of franchise tag hell, and he'll be trying to be the richest organization in all of professional sports worldwide is somehow going to be crying poverty because of the salary cap. I think that's where he can't say it and have it taken at face value. And this goes back to DeMarcus Ware or various other guys where he drags his feet and drags his feet and doesn't want to make a decision. And then they end up, the problem ends up being twofold by the time they do make a decision.
Yeah, going to be interesting, man. There's odds out on where CeeDee Lamb could end up if he's not a Dallas Cowboy. The Kansas City Chiefs, 5-1 are the favorite on the board.
I think the problem is that there's a lot of truth to what Jerry says, and it's hard to pay three guys like Dak Prescott, Micah Parsons, and CeeDee Lamb. Mm-hmm. I feel like they would much rather retain, if they had to make the choice, they'd much rather retain CeeDee Lamb than Micah Parsons. It's interesting that Micah Parsons hasn't really made headlines about any of this the whole time. As far as I can tell, at least from what's filtered out of Dallas, is that he's being the good soldier in all of this.
That's interesting. So you don't think they would want to keep Micah Parsons is a defensive player of the year caliber guy.
I think, right. Some of this I'm basing on what the Dallas media member up there said in the offseason. That there's people in the organization that wouldn't necessarily be crying if Micah Parsons was out of the building.
Yeah, there's a lot more drama that comes with Micah Parsons, I think.
If I had to guess, there's a certain maturity there, almost like with Jadeveon Clowney, where without seeing everything that goes behind the scenes, they might just get tired of some of his stuff sometimes.
Maybe so. Tyreek Hill's latest take on track and field is interesting. And we've got, it's never too late for a great Andre Johnson story. I know he went into the Hall of Fame over a week ago, but Arian Foster has a phenomenal Andre Johnson story that we will get to, and that is coming up next.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, quick reminder, it's Texans Ticket Tuesday. Hey, Seth, it's Texans Ticket Tuesday today. We gave away.
Deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal, man. You get front row bullpen seats to the game on Saturday, Texans and Giants. Big congratulations from earlier in the show to Jason, who lives right here in Houston, who is going to be going to that game, courtesy of Sports Radio 610. Noon and 5 p.m. hours is when you need to be listening, and you got your chance.
And we don't require body painting if you win these tickets, but we highly encourage it.
Yeah. 610 body paint.
Yeah, 610 body paint.
Yeah.
You can go Texans if you like, but 610 body paint would be smashingly fun.
That'd be beautiful.
If somebody goes with 610 body paint that wins these tickets, we'll have to make our way down from the press box at some point.
For sure.
Or before the game. Come see us out by the Modelo tent for our pregame show, and we'll take a picture with you before the game.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and actually, yeah, please do. Whether you won the tickets or not, Seth and I will be out there for pregame, so come by and say hello, man. It's going to be a fun season. That would be the thing, because we give away, I believe it's a pair of tickets we give away, but what if we, in the future, I'm just spitballing here, we give you an extra ticket, a third ticket, if you promise to paint 6, 1, and 0 on your three chests.
Yeah,
when you're out there.
Stay in order.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, it's not Sports Radio 160, all right?
We got to put that in the fine print.
Yes.
Don't try to get us on a technicality.
That's right, or I'm going to sick my ponytail lawyer son on you, all right? Tyreek Hill sat down with Kay Adams at Dolphins camp yesterday, or earlier this week, probably yesterday, because it was Monday. And I guess Noah Lyles, the Olympic gold medalist in the 100-meter dash, finished with a bronze in the 200-meter because he supposedly had COVID for that race, so he finished with a bronze there.
The COVID during, like he was an active COVID?
He raced with
like
COVID.
Oh, found out afterwards, okay.
No, he knew he had COVID, and he raced.
Okay.
Yeah.
I misunderstood the reports there. I thought he was recovering from COVID.
I believe he had it, and if I'm not mistaken, I thought he had COVID because there was a story later on that he actually tweeted out a picture of his COVID test a couple days later showing that it was negative, that he didn't have COVID anymore. So at any rate, COVID's not really relevant to this story. Apparently, Noah Lyles had a take that in sports, teams such as the Super Bowl champions that call themselves world champions aren't really world champions because it's the National Football League.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're an Olympic champion, I mean, you're going up against every other country on the globe. Tyreek Hill was asked about Noah Lyles' take by Kay Adams. Here's what he had to say.
Sprinter Noah Lyles. He said that Super Bowl champs should not consider themselves world champions. What do you think of that?
Noah Lyles can't say nothing after what just happened to him. You know what I'm saying? They didn't want to come out and pretend like he's sick. I feel like that's like horseradish. So for him to like do that and say that we're not world champions of like our sport says like, come on, bro. Like, just speak on what you know about. You know what I'm saying? And that's track.
Would you like to race him when he gets home?
I will beat Noah Lyles.
You think so?
I will beat Noah Lyles.
Like by a lot?
No, I wouldn't beat him by a lot, but I would beat Noah Lyles.
I'd like to see that happen.
And guess what? When I beat him, I'm going to put on a COVID mask.
Oh, God.
And let him know I mean business. Because I do mean business.
That's where Tyreek Hill, I admire the fact that he still can get lured into a pissing contest that doesn't need to be gotten into. Like the whole... Yeah, people say that all the time. It's like one of the oldest comedians' jokes is still in existence. It's like, why do they call it the World Championship when it's... Now, in other sports, like baseball forever before it was a worldwide sport, it was easy because you're like, look, this is the only country they really play baseball. Yeah, you're the de facto world champion because nobody else is really playing baseball. Yeah. It gets dicier with baseball and basketball and hockey these days because there's some really good international leagues, you know? With football, it's still... There's no other country right now that is a hotbed of NFL talent. There's a few international players here and there. So you're the world champion. But if a track guy wants to go off and spout off about it, you just let him. It's punching down to even respond to
That's
it.
What I was
You know,
say,
it's like you've got your one big moment every 4 years. It's not, and I'm not saying that without trying to win the argument or anything. It's just like, yeah, okay, go for it. You do you. But I don't know. When it comes to actually sprinting, the problem is this, that Tyreek Hill, if he had trained as a sprinter full-time for the last 8 years, yeah, he might be the fastest guy in the world. Yeah. Who knows? But it's so... Those guys, their technique and everything else and their strategy and training is so refined that I just... No, I don't think for a second that he would win in a 100-meter dash.
No.
Not to mention just running 100 meters.
Right.
Like, there's a pacing element to running 100 meters.
Oh,
They have to... The last 40 meters is more about how well you manage your body decelerating because the body can only go so hard for so long. Like, all that stuff that factors into it, I don't think there's a chance in hell he'd beat him in the 100-meter dash.
Noah Lyles is the classic example of that. He trailed the entire race until the last 5 meters. Like, he was way behind in that 100-meter dash.
Yeah, there's just way too much technique involved and way more than you would ever think. But it's like anything else in life. When you take something that looks simple but compete at the highest level, it gets super refined.
Yep.
So I don't think he should have made that challenge. 40-yard dash, maybe different.
40,
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
You know, the 40-yard dash... Does Noah Lyles not have like a really good start? Is that is he known as a guy who's better in the back half of the 100?
I'm not a track and field guy. I just know in the 100 meter Olympic race that he won the gold medal in, he was way back to start and came back at the end. Yeah,
there's too much, like even just starting from the blocks as opposed to, and I know that Tyreek Hill has done all this stuff, but it's he hasn't been training full time his entire life for it, so I don't think so. But I do credit him with perhaps ultimately. He might boost track and field's elevation if he did a one-time event, an exhibition. He'd get a nice TV payday from it, and a lot of people would watch it.
Netflix. Yeah. This is one of those, like, Netflix has started to dabble in this stuff, the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson thing, the Joey Chestnut, Kobayashi thing, right, on Labor Day?
This thing really could happen. Some of the golf events that they've been doing with celebrities. Yeah.
I'm here for it. That's a great idea.
It's Tyreek's idea.
It's your idea to put it on pay-per-view, though, just now, or Netflix or whatever. Arian Foster, on his Macro Dosing podcast, they got talking about, that's the name of the podcast, they may macro dose on there. They got talking about Andre Johnson, who is hyper-relevant right now because he just went into the Hall of Fame. Arian Foster talks about his rookie year. Towards the end, in 2009, Arian Foster ended up playing the last four games of 2009, he was on the practice squad all year. This is a great Andre Johnson story from Arian Foster.
I didn't talk to him like my entire rookie year. Like, we just didn't ever speak until the last. This is a funny story. We didn't really speak to each other. Like, didn't talk. And then we play in Miami. He's from Miami. And that was one of the last games that I got to start. And we in the huddle and we end up with the 4 minute drill, which is like, you got to run the clock out in order. And if you get a first down, game over, right? And so, like I said, Dre don't really speak. His presence was just there. Right before the last drive, we gotta go down. We gotta get a couple first downs to win a game. Dre turned to me and he said, "Hey, Arian." And I turned, I'm like, "What's up, Dre? Run us up out of here, man." And I was like, "Okay, man." I was like, "I'm gonna do it for you, man." Dre don't ever speak, so I was like, "It's dope."
Yeah, and the video is really funny because Arian gets this scared look on his face, reliving, Andre, I got you, Dre.
Yeah, that was kind of, it was a really good Arian Foster story because he has that presence about him, or a really good Andre Johnson story. He has that presence about him. And Arian at that point in his career was still, you know, he was young, fresh Arian, where he's like, "Hey, he loves everybody and everything."
He was on the practice squad 2 weeks before A lot of people think 2010 was his first year. It was like, no, he was on the practice squad for most of 2009, and he got to play in the last four games of the year, and he was really, really good.
I apologize, by the way. I meant to send that clip to you. I meant to send you that clip like 3 weeks ago, and I realized I didn't. I apologize.
Oh, no worries. It's okay.
I do this all the time, everybody. I'll be like, "Sean, I sent you that clip," and then I check my messages like, "Oh, nope, never did it."
Okay.
Was
that the look? You had a look on your face as that clip started. Like, it was.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh, I never sent it to him, did I?" I apologize. I had it when it was fresh and new.
Yeah.
And I neglected to send it to you.
Well, it just popped up on mine. It's funny anytime. David Anderson told us a similar story to Jonathan Alexander in that long form piece that Jonathan did about Andre, where he just collected a bunch of Andre anecdotes. And David Anderson said, as a rookie in 06, he was so intimidated by Andre because Andre never talked. Mm-hmm. And he never said, like, and especially younger players, like, he, like, didn't walk up and talk to you or whatever. And then DA made a play in practice one day, and Andre came over and tapped him on the helmet, and he thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like, it was the validation. Like, yeah, I made a play.
I remember we were, my rookie year after we lost in the playoffs to Denver, this was when I was in Jacksonville, obviously. I'd played a good amount that year for a rookie. And Jimmy Smith was the guy at the time. Like, Jimmy Smith, he had, you know, his personal battles that he had that probably kept him. He was a Hall of Fame caliber player. Could have been in the Hall of Fame if he'd, been in a different situation. But, like, I'd never talked to him before, I don't think. And we were riding on the bus home from the airport. So by that point, it was probably like 3 a.m. by the time we got home from Denver. And Jimmy just started, complimenting me on how I played that year and everything. And I was like, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
Like, I get a little teary thinking about it. It's acknowledgement from this guy that you almost look at like you're almost a fan, like I didn't talk to him the whole season. He's on the other side of the ball. I'm just a rookie trying to keep my mouth shut. And that was like very motivational for the rest of my career in a lot of ways. So it means a lot. I tell veteran players that all the time. Like, you'll be blown away by some of the young guys that'll come up to you years later and tell you about a conversation you don't even remember having.
Yep.
So, like, never forget to encourage the young guys.
Yeah, man.
It goes a long way.
And it takes 10 seconds to do it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's
yeah.
the exponential effect of spending 10 seconds doing something.
Yeah, and Andre, and because people had so much respect for him, and because when he didn't speak for no reason.
Right.
You know, like, it felt like you were uncovering a precious gem when he spoke to you about something.
Something we saw on the Astros broadcast last night, I cannot wait to see it play out in practice tonight. We will tell you what that is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you. We will talk to the guys on In the Loop in just a few minutes here. Yusei Kikuchi, third start as an Astro tonight. Talked about this earlier in the show. Kikuchi, pretty cool shot of him in the dugout last night. Got his little iPad in front of him there, kind of studying things about the Tampa Bay Rays. He's got a lot of experience pitching against the Rays because he was in Toronto. Spencer Arrighetti sitting next to him. They're kind of giving feedback to each other. Here was Julia Morales kind of taking us through that as it was playing out on our TV screens.
He says, "They are so prepared here. I am quickly learning what it takes to be a winning organization with just how much video these guys are watching and how they talk to each other and how they help each other." He is just really impressed with everything that's going on right now in the Astros organization, which is great to hear.
It's, you know, the... And that was cool. And it was cool to see. And it's, you know, it's fun to watch the interaction. Especially when you look at like Arigetti and Yusei Kikuchi, like theoretically, these are two guys that are competing with each other for potentially a spot in the playoff rotation. You know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah,
there is
yeah.
an internal competition that goes with that, you know? And
yeah, they, the during that point in the broadcast, they were showing Kikuchi sitting next to Arigetti and Arigetti consulting with Kikuchi on what he was seeing. Kikuchi was scouting the Rays batters because he's pitching tonight. And I think it was Kendall Graveman sitting next to him. He had his hand over his face. Sometimes I forget that Kendall Graveman is still around.
Yeah.
He was, because he was, Kendall Graveman took some pitches off the mound yesterday at Fenway. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a reminder that, yeah, the Astros pitching coaching staff and analytics staff and really the entire system from A-ball on up is, it's different than it is in most places. Kikuchi's been to a couple places and he's never seen like this for the Astros. And I just, after that horrific beginning to the season for the Astros pitching staff, they've been the best pitching staff in baseball since they started their turnaround. It's it made me feel good about, like, not necessarily this season as much as just the future of the Astros.
Yeah.
Especially when you're going against a team like the Rays, which against all odds has remained competitive just by virtue of developing players. They never ever retain them.
Yeah.
But they're one of the other gold standards in pitcher development with the Rays. The Astros are like the Rays but add money. You know,
yes.
It just kind of like the Red Sox took what the A's did with Moneyball back in the day, added money to it, and won a championship with it.
Yeah.
That's where it's still a really good situation for pitchers in Houston.
It's funny, but when you take, like, you take Julia, hey Ben, play it one more time because it was pretty quick. When you play what Julia said right here,
he says they are so prepared here. I am quickly learning what it takes to be a winning organization with just how much video these guys are watching and how they talk to each other and how they help each other. He is just really impressed with everything that's going on right now in the Astros organization, which is great to hear.
I don't know, man. Like, I just feel, and you laid it out well earlier, Seth, where you said sometimes, like, it's stuff you know is good for yourself, but it's the willingness not just to do it, but once you do it, to stick with it.
Yeah.
And you made kind of this,
like, financial management, healthy eating, all those things. What we should be doing.
All those things. And yet, like, that stuff there, especially at the end there, like, boy, the way they talk to each other and help each other out and things like that, like, that just sounds so basic. I'm like, man, what ratchet clubhouse has Yusei Kikuchi spent his time in last 5 years, you know?
You know, I think it's kind of my skepticism over Cliff Kingsbury as an NFL offensive coordinator.
Okay.
Is that when you would watch those, I had a hard time criticizing Kyler Murray for a perceived lack of, you know, doing film work away from the building and everything, because I don't know if he was being given the tools to actually do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury's offense never evolved into a genuine NFL offense, and it showed up. That's why midway through the season, those teams would start to know exactly what was going on with the Cardinals' offense. It was, you know, the guys who weren't the primary receiver in a one-read offense were just lazing through their routes. Defensive backs knew it, and that's where Cliff Kingsbury lacked that commitment to the obsessive attention to detail. That's really the hard thing to do. You know, like, yeah, you could have executed that offense a lot better than you did, but nobody actually gave a damn or even knew what they were supposed to be doing when it came to the finer stuff. So it's easy to look at and say we should do some of that, what the Astros are doing, versus, hey, we should revamp our entire pitching system from A-ball on up to where everybody's doing the same things all the time. That takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's like running a full court press in basketball.
Right,
You know, in college. Easy to do.
Yeah.
Or easy to recognize and to say, like, oh, yeah, that's what we should be doing. It's a lot harder to get guys to commit to that over the course of an entire season.
So Texans back at practice in about an hour and a half. 11:30 practice starts today. I'll be anxious to see, you know, Laremy Tunsil was back out there on Sunday with, you know, back at starting left tackle with the ones. He was doing everything in 11-on-11. So let's see if he's back out there. I'm anxious to see if Joe Mixon actually gets reps, Seth, in the 11-on-11 portion. He was suited up at practice and did the individual drills. Christian Harris is the one that is starting to concern me a little bit. He got back out there on Sunday and was fairly quickly. He aggravated something because he went back in the building shortly
there. It feels too much like Kyle Tucker right now.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
especially because I went back and looked. My memory at the time when that first day of training camp, we're all kind of looking around, trying to, you know, the first day of training camp, I'm trying to learn the new guys' numbers and everything, and I'm looking around, and it occurred to me, like, midway through the practice, hey, Christian Harris isn't out here.
Yeah.
Didn't I see him in a couple of videos talking about how healthy he feels and how ready he is for the season?
Right.
So I went back, and I saw Aaron Wilson had a video of him working out on, like, July 15th. Out in the heat somewhere in Houston with a private coach. And it's been very mysterious. It seemed like, okay, well, it's no big deal apparently, but it's just tweaked something and he won't be here for a little bit. But now we're heading down to, what's this, the fourth week of training camp?
Yeah.
And he still hasn't participated in a full practice yet. I'm getting kind of nervous about it.
I am too, because that's a position where you're not like, okay, well, the next guy up is so-and-so. Like, if one of the starting wide receivers, when I'm like, all right, well, you still got Nico Collins and Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz. You can still figure out a way. You know, if it was defensive, even like defensive tackle, I know none of them are world beaters, but you feel like there's four, five, six guys there where if one goes out, you're okay with the next guy that goes in. A linebacker ain't that. Like, there's a it's Azeez Alshire, a healthy Christian Harris, and then who knows what after that.
Like, it was Henry Toa and I think Neville Hewitt were in the base to start the game last week.
Yeah, I think so.
So, like, Henry Toa is still very much a work in progress, I think. And, like, I do think that he looks more confident and decisive and more like an NFL linebacker on the field from the limited glimpses I saw of him, but it's not the same as having Christian Harris out there. So it's not an awesome situation right now.
I thought this same thing when you brought up Micah Parsons earlier. We were talking about CeeDee Lamb just because of Micah's relationship with CJ Stroud. Just simple question on the text page. Could y'all see Parsons ever in a Texans uniform?
I don't know if he's got... Boy, that's hard to turn down an incredible edge rusher. It's really, really hard to turn down an incredible edge rusher. I don't know if he's D'Amico Ryan's ideal edge rusher. D'Amico Ryan's wants a certain element of physicality versus the run as well as the pass, and I'm not quite sure that's like his dream scenario. But I wouldn't turn it down.
No,
I'm not gonna kick him out of bed for eating crackers.
Yeah. In a perfect world, Will Anderson becomes your Micah Parsons, the edge guy that you pay $30+ million a year to. You know,
that's
in a perfect world. John Lopez and Figgy Figure here.
I've predicted it.
Predicted what?
That Micah Parsons eventually will be a Texan.
He's going to be a Texan? Yeah.
Not. It won't be anytime soon.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but...
He's heading into year four.
Yeah.
So that Cowboys don't have to do anything with him for two more years.
Right.
Yeah.
I could see Mike Zimmer strangling him on the field. I could see Mike Zimmer
Cowboys
butting
DC.
Heads with Micah Parsons. Yeah.
To be fair to Micah Parsons, I could see Mike Zimmer strangling a lot of people on the field.
Yeah. Not to death or anything, but you know, when who's the basketball coach? Was it
Bobby
Knight choked a student.
No. The guy that was
Latrell Sprewell and PJ Carlissimo.
PJ Carlissimo. I could see him pulling a PJ Carlissimo at some point this year. Well, look, Danielle Hunter, when he talked about how, like, hey, he's been able to play this is the first time he's been able to play this wide open, like, just pin your ears back and go system.
Yeah.
He was in Mike Zimmer's system before that, hyper-disciplined, and not the same. And Mike Zimmer is one of the best defensive coordinators who's ever put on a headset.
Yeah.
I feel like there could be a potential personality issue brewing there at some point.
Yeah, I could see that. How you fellas doing?
Man, great.
How we good, man.
Yeah,
what's
absolutely
going on?
Great. Feeling hashtag
it's
blessed.
The first time we get to see you all week because we're out of here at 8 o'clock on Mondays.
Yes.
So practice starts at 11:30 today.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You're here. What don't you like about it?
I'm worried about you.
Oh, you are? I'll be fine.
I'm worried about everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
108 heat index out there today.
Dude. Man. Well, I got in my truck yesterday. I got to get one of those little windshield cover things from the inside.
Oh, yeah.
It was 118
degrees. I've never had one of those
before. I haven't either. It's too big of a hassle.
We actually criticized people that had that.
Dude, it was 118 when I got in my truck.
No,
hold on. What was the criticism of people having those things?
Yeah. The thing was, you had people just going into a convenience store and put the thing up. It's just like you in there for like 2 seconds.
Yes, Houston. I don't even know that.
Now, I get what y'all saying now. I understand.
Now you understand.
I wasn't familiar with y'all work.
Biggie, I had a dozen eggs in the passenger seat, and I didn't want them to be hard boiled by the time I came out.
That shade isn't going to help.
A dozen eggs. I came out of the store, and there's an omelet sitting in my front seat.
It ain't going to help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Man, the Strohs. Are you excited for Kikuchi tonight?
I am. We're all going to have
a
great
Kikuchi.
Night.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to set you up for some sophomoric joke.
I literally just said we're all going to have a great night with Kikuchi.
Okay. Maybe I was putting thoughts in your head.
No, you weren't.
putting thoughts in your head.
You were not.
Yeah, man.
Kikuchi's a good test, too, because his first start was versus the Rays, and they had seen him before. You know, they were familiar with him. But they were kind of ambushed by him adding the changeup so much.
Mm-hmm.
So where now they've had the benefit of a couple of weeks of reflecting on it, we'll see exactly what their response is.
Yeah, that was the one game they won against the Rays was the one Kikuchi pitched.
It's happening with the Astros.
You killed them earlier this year.
I know.
Where are you? Have you come? You said they were dead like three weeks into the season.
I thought they were dead.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well, excuse me.
For having an opinion.
But have you apologized to them for this?
Apologize to the Astros?
No, I'm just joking. I hate when people apologize for opinions.
I hate when people say they need to apologize.
Right.
They owe so and so an apology. Who are you to say if they owe an apology?
Right. So now it's happening for the Astros.
It feels like it's happening, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think we're a couple Verlander rehab starts away from having a full six pack out there.
Isn't that what they said yesterday? One more?
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.